Well, I'm in. So the next time they go down is Monday, the 1st of November. So I'm tagging along just to find out what this is all about. So I think there's always room for one or two or three or four more. So check in with Jeff or any of the youth. And I think this is an awesome thing. And I just wanted to say this morning, Clarissa, wherever you are, you rock. That was great. Wow. Okay, our children are going to go to their classes. Youth are going to go upstairs and dig into the Word. And we're going to dig in down here in the book of Joshua. So if you have your notes there, I'm calling today's message still a disciple's life, but a disciple's life at BWLTI, which is the Bondage and Wilderness Leadership Training Institute. At the end of the message, I hope we understand that we're all involved and we're all enrolled in this institute. So let's look at our notes. Over four centuries of living in Egypt, with much of it spent as Pharaoh's hard-pressed slaves, brought the people of Israel to despair, a despair made more terrible by the oft-told stories of hauntingly beautiful promises made to their patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The people's cries mounted to heaven, and God heard and was sympathetic to their torment. He chose Moses to lead the people out of Egypt. And now that Moses had died, a new leader was needed for the entry into Canaan. So that's where we've come. You remember the story when Jacob's family they left Canaan at Joseph's invitation to come down into Egypt because of the famine. And so they went down, and after Joseph died, they were there basically as indentured servants. And then eventually a king came in who didn't remember who Joseph was. And so the Israelites became slaves in Egypt, and they were there for four centuries. And so now it's at the end of this time, and Joshua is born into this type of slavery that they were experiencing. So number one, as we look into this story here this morning, number one, leadership training part one. And your blank is Hebrew slave. This is the beginning of Joshua's training that was going to be later. So you can imagine, here they are, they've been four centuries. Joshua is born into a family, a Hebrew family in Egypt, where the history of their people for 400 years has been, we live in this country. Everybody that Joshua knew in his family and the rest of the Hebrews around him, they were all born in Egypt. They had no thought of ever living anywhere else, really, except for these stories that were constantly told by the elders about these promises to their forefathers, this Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, as they referred to them. And so they would tell these stories, but their present reality was anything but living in a land flowing with milk and honey. It was something they'd heard about, but couldn't really experience. And so there was a sameness to life. Every day was the same thing. They were in abject poverty. They had to work hard. They were never rewarded much for anything, if ever. They had to deal with slave masters. So Joshua's growing up, his father works for Pharaoh in whichever area he was selected to work. And by the way, this is really corny, and I shouldn't really do this, but I just can't help myself. And since Keith is in here, I won't have to deal with that. But did you know that Joshua was the only one in the Bible that didn't have any parents? He was Joshua, son of Nun. Anyway, sorry. I had to do that. So now that it's over, I didn't have to. I just wanted to. So anyway, he's born into this family. All he sees around him are other families. They're all slaves. None of them have the freedom to do what they want to do. None of them can really get ahead much because they are kept down. And now there is, of course, great fear ever since Moses was born. And you remember the edict was sent out. All the newborn Hebrew boys were to be killed because Egypt was afraid of this hugely growing population of Jews, that they were going to overtake Egypt. And if they wanted to revolt, their numbers were so large at that point that they were afraid that they would actually have the upper hand as they went against the Egyptians. And so they made life much more difficult. And you know the story probably of making them make more bricks, more adobe-type bricks with less straw. So less material to hold these bricks together. And they required them to up their output there in the bricks for the building of all the places in Egypt. So this is where Joshua was born. Everybody he knows is a slave. He sees the mistreatment. He's kind of accustomed to it. As a little child, he's told where he can go and where he can't go and what he needs to watch out for. And they learn to get savvy in the way they deal. But they see the reality they see around them is so different from the stories they hear of the glory of the old days and the glory of the promise of the God of their fathers bringing him into their own land where they will be sovereign and they will be able to have the freedom to live and move. So probably, you know, Joshua was not an adult yet when they left Egypt, and so we're guessing he's somewhere around 15 years old. So for 15 years, all he's known is an existence of a Hebrew slave, growing up and probably now actually working and being caused to work for Egypt as well under a slave master. And so for 15 years, with the promise of this wonderful land that they've been given by God, but what all he knows around him is suffering and pain and hardship and difficulty and delayed promises, delayed satisfaction. This is what we believe is coming our way, but this is where we're living. And so many of us can find ourselves in that kind of a situation. We know God's promises. We know how much he wants for us. We know he's a God of provision and he's faithful and he's a God of love. But our current circumstances might really look more like we're living as slaves in Egypt. And where is this provision? And where is the good news? And when is it going to happen for me? And why does it happen for all those people and not for me? And so Joshua's first 15 years basically were lived in that kind of an environment. And then, of course, as a teenager there, he sees Moses come in and all of the plagues, and finally they are released to go, and they go through the Passover and the sprinkling the blood on the doorpost so that when the angel of death passes over, the Hebrew homes are not touched, but all the others lose their firstborn. And so he's brought out of that kind of bondage and into this new existence now, where the second part of number two, leadership training part two, he becomes not a Hebrew slave, he becomes a desert wanderer. This is the second part of his training that God is planning for him. So he goes from a terrible existence with harsh slave masters, with no hope in sight of that ever changing, without really much to look forward to in life at all. And so he's got all of these expressions of sadness and sorrow and weeping amongst his people, because every time the stories are told of the great promises of God, all the Hebrews would weep at these incredible promises and the gap between the promise and their present reality. And so now they're moving out into the desert. Now they're seeing a new phase, and Joshua moves into a new area. So let's look in number 2a, chosen of the tribe of Ephraim. So now the main part of our story is going to be in the book of Joshua, but let's look in Numbers chapter 13. In chapter 13 of Numbers, just the first verse, first of all, the Lord said to Moses, "Send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites. From each ancestral tribe, send one of its leaders." Joshua is a young man. And it says down in verse 8, "From the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, son of Nun." And Moses changed his name to Joshua down in verse 16. Moses gave Hoshea, son of Nun, the name Joshua. So he's already distinguished himself in the tribe of Ephraim. He must be an exemplary young man. So when it comes time to explore, of course, he'd be considered a man at the age of 13. So he's already distinguished himself. As people look around, the Lord directed Moses. He probably had some input from some of the leaders of the tribes, and they selected this young man to be their representative of their tribe as these spies were sent into Canaan to explore and see what it was like there. And they were gone for the 40 days, as we know. So first of all, that's what we see here as Moses picks the spies to go into the land. And then in chapter 14, verses 6 through 9, Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had explored the land, tore their clothes, because now the other 10, there were 12 that went, of course, and 10 came back and said, "It's impossible, we're like ants in their presence, and they're giants and all that stuff, we can't go in." But Joshua and Caleb tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite assembly, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will swallow them up. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them." So here are these young men, we're assuming that probably Caleb is not much older than Joshua. They come back, and of the 12, 10 say, "Just forget about it. Those cities are fortified. It's too amazing over there. We're like grasshoppers in their sight. And so it's just ridiculous. There's no way we're going to be able to do this." And Joshua and Caleb dared to stand up in front of everybody and say, "Well, what we saw was a totally different picture. You know, yes, they're big. Yes, it's fortified, but it's a land flowing with milk and honey." And then they said here in verse 9, "Their protection is gone." They were able to determine as they went through the land, their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them. So they're taking a great risk here in standing up, giving another report from the other 10. So if you're with a group of 12, and 10 come back with a negative report, how easy is it going to be at that point to stand up and say something different than the majority? Have you ever been the minority that's had to stand up and give a report? You know everybody disagrees with you, or the vast majority disagrees with you. So do you at that point just kind of give in and go along with the crowd? Or do we stand up and say, "You know what, I know this isn't popular, but this is what we believe. This is what I believe. This is what I'm standing on." And we see that their protection is gone. They're afraid because they've already seen what God has done. So they're chosen of the tribe of Ephraim to give leadership. Now, Joshua is chosen to lead Israel. Now, this verse is in the second telling of the law in the book of Deuteronomy. So we're kind of moving around here. The whole story isn't told just in total chronological sequence. And so sometimes you get two pieces of the story here. And in Deuteronomy chapter 31, the first 8 verses, this is an amazing passage here. "Moses went out and spoke these words to all Israel. I am now 120 years old, and I am no longer able to lead you. The Lord has said to me, you shall not cross the Jordan. The Lord your God himself will cross over ahead of you. He will destroy these nations before you, and you will take possession of their land. Joshua also will cross over ahead of you, as the Lord said, and the Lord will do to them what he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, whom he destroyed along with their land. The Lord will deliver them to you, and you must do to them all that I have commanded you. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them, for the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him, in the presence of all Israel, be strong and courageous, for you must go with this people into the land that the Lord swore to their forefathers to give them, and you must divide it amongst them as an inheritance. The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. And look over a few chapters in the last chapter of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy 34, and just verse 9. Moses has died. This word has been given. It's been proclaimed in front of all of Israel. Joshua is now to give leadership. And then chapter 34, verse 9. Now Joshua, son of Nun, was filled with the spirit of wisdom because Moses had laid his hands on him. So the Israelites listened to him and did what the Lord had commanded Moses. So now Joshua is finishing up leadership part two. First part, first 15 years, Hebrew slave in Egypt. Second part now, he becomes this desert wanderer through the 40 years in the desert. He outlives the other spies because they were not allowed to live because they gave an evil report. And do you ever notice how easy it is also in a group for one person to give a bad report and suddenly the whole room is complaining? It's just amazing, isn't it? It's harder to convince people to go and do something positive, but when somebody comes in and complains, it's just like this infectious thing that happens, and suddenly the whole room, the mood just turns sour. And so that's what had happened, and God just said, well, you guys are not going to go any further. Not only are you not going to see Canaan, you're not going to live to see the end of the day. And so they were all struck dead, the other 10. But Joshua and Caleb survived. Okay, so he's been chosen from the tribe of Ephraim as a leader, chosen to lead the whole people of Israel after Moses is gone. And then, see, the choice is affirmed by the Lord in Joshua 1, verses 1 through 9. So let's just read this. We know one verse out of this passage, but this is God's confirmation. So the first 9 verses of Joshua 1. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, Moses, my servant, is dead. Then you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I'm about to give to them, to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon and from the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country to the great sea on the west. No one will be able to stand up against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their forefathers to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may succeed, you may be successful wherever you go. Do not let this book of the law depart from your mouth. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you'll be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Powerful words of affirmation of this leadership role from this young man who started off as a slave with little hope of that ever really changing. Who could have possibly foretold the arrival of a Moses leading through a series of 10 plagues, ending with the death of all the firstborn in Egypt, and then Pharaoh would just say, okay, get out of here. I mean, I just don't think anyone of the Hebrews could have pictured how God was going to do this. He could have done it any number of ways, but this is the miraculous, unforgettable way that God chose to liberate his people. So even as a young man then, Joshua has seen the mighty hand of God. And if you read through the whole story, you'll just see these great pictures of unforgettable things that God did for the people of Israel. So now Joshua has come through the second part of his training, through 40 years in the desert. He is now approximately 55 years old. So no longer the youngest of men, although still pretty spry probably. He's only 55, and that's looking very young these days. Preach, right? Yes, that'll preach. So anyway, I remember 55 still. So number three, we finished the leadership training, the wonderful school, this leadership training institute of slavery and desert wanderings. You know, just great preparation, right, for the things that God has for us. And, you know, I don't know whether we can relate to these things or not, but just feeling like there's been a whole period of bondage, and we get out of bondage just to wander around in the desert. Not exactly the most fulfilling task in the world, but learning all the same. And Joshua was learning all of his time, following Moses, seeing what Moses was doing, seeing Moses' faithfulness to the Lord, and being able to become his aide, his right-hand man. And this is an exciting thing. So finally, at 55, Joshua kind of comes into his own, and now he gives the leadership that he's been training for his whole life. Moses is gone, which has to be a little intimidating, because these people have just thought the world of Moses, even though they griped and complained. But people often gripe and complain about people they think the world of, and especially as leaders. And, you know, in our country, we do the same thing. And anyway, let's not go there. So, number three, the leadership commitment. He's in as now a warrior leader. Joshua becomes a warrior leader. And the very first thing he does, and we're not going to read the story, but in chapter 2 of Joshua, he sends spies out, two spies, on a secret mission. He doesn't tell anybody else. He just chooses them and has them go in and check out the land. And these two guys, this is the story of Rahab, and you'll remember that story, and you can read it in chapter 2, not now, but later. And unless you're falling asleep and you need to read, that's okay. God's word is pretty good, too. But these two slaves go in, they come back with this truthful report that the people's hearts are quaking in fear because they know what God is doing with the Israelites. I mean, they didn't have text messaging, but the word always got around. People knew what was going on. Somehow, messages got carried. There were runners. They had all kinds of situations there where they had a way of finding out. And so the word had reached the people of Canaan that there's a dangerous group with an extremely dangerous God coming your way. And they were just like, how do we deal with it? They've heard the story of the Red Sea. They've heard of the plagues. They're just like, wow, what are we going to do? How are we ever going to stand up against that kind of a people? And so the report came back that the people are quaking in fear, and they're really not sure how they're going to survive here. So the first thing, the strategic thing that Joshua does, maybe as confirmation to himself, is sending these spies. They come back with this good report because Joshua chose two guys to do a good thing. Maybe he thought that he and Caleb were the two good ones. There was no point sending 10 useless ones again. So he just sent two guys, basically guaranteed to come back with an honest report, and they did. So Joshua sees what they've done, and he understands in the end of chapter 2, verse 24, the report is, the Lord has surely given the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us. So what a great idea. Now, one thing, we always remember the crossing of the Red Sea, but we don't often think of the crossing of the Jordan. In Joshua chapter 3, were you aware that God did the exact same thing again? When they came down, he had the priests come down with the Ark of the Covenant, and as soon as they stepped foot into the Jordan, which was at flood time, flooding its banks, as soon as they touched it, the water was heaped up in a pile, far away, and the priests went in with the Ark of the Covenant and stood in the middle of the Jordan River on dry ground. And so all Israel passed across on dry ground. They weren't being chased this time, but they were going into foreign territory. And everything happened. Then they were sent back out to get 12 stones from the bed of the river to bring over to the other side, stack them up as a memorial, a stone for each of the tribes, as a memorial of what God had done. So God used a miraculous crossing of a river to get them out of slavery, and then he uses another miraculous crossing of another river to get them into the promised land. And there's tons of things and analogies and examples we can use in that. But that's all written in chapter 3 of Joshua. And so B here in number 3 is Joshua's reputation is established in Joshua chapters 3 and 4 as they cross over. They cross over in safety. So in chapter 4, verse 14, it says, "That day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they revered him all the days of his life, just as they had revered Moses." And so they experience this great leadership of Joshua, his ability to hear what the Lord is saying, to follow the Lord's example, and to see God's faithfulness as he takes them and is actually bringing them in. At Joshua's age, I can't imagine what this must have felt like, because he is actually in the midst of what God is doing to bring these centuries-old promises into reality, into what he is actually living, not just a story they've heard about, you know, that they dust off every once in a while to remind themselves and to give themselves a little encouragement, but they're actually living in the fulfillment of what God has always promised them. And these stories of the land flowing with milk and honey, this land of Canaan, which was given to their forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, as they're crossing the Jordan River, I don't think it was possible for any of the Israelites to miss that. I mean, to say momentous is kind of an understatement, but to see the miracle that God, even now, was accomplishing what he had always promised. He was good to his promise. He was making sure, and it was through a miracle. It was through something that was absolutely impossible. Now, we might say, well, you know what? They've seen it once, and it's like, you know, it's no big deal. You know, we know this river opening up stuff, you know. But, you know, that was 40 years ago, and none of the men who came out of Egypt as adults lived to see this. They all died in the desert, as God promised them they would, because of their disobedience and their stiff-necked attitude toward him and his faithfulness. So it's been 40 years they've been in the desert. And now to get across the Jordan, I can imagine even the days leading up to this crossing where they would be pretty, you know, griping and complaining. It's like, how on earth are we ever going to get into Canaan? The Jordan is at flood tide. I mean, this is ridiculous. You know, I'm sure some people were saying that. But as they crossed over in safety and as they brought those stones out and they piled them up there as a memorial to remember. And so anytime someone asks, what are these stones for? It's to remember God's faithfulness at bringing us into the fulfillment of his promises. Now, maybe some of us have spent our teen years as slaves, and we feel like we're in the midst of 40 years of desert wandering. We know the promises, and we know God's planning it. We know he's faithful. At least, you know, we're still able to, you know, recite those truths, even though they feel false, even though they feel like it's never going to happen for me. I don't know when this is ever going to happen. So Joshua is 55 years old, living this phenomenal experience, and his reputation is being firmly established. The end of chapter 4, God did this, the changing of the the waters and everything. In chapter 24, verse 24, he did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God. Now, if God had done that for us, if he had led us to the Red Sea, opened it up, we all passed over on dry ground, millions, plus animals and all the possessions, and kept us safe, and so that the clothing and shoes didn't wear out through 40 years of wandering in the desert, and then he brings us across the Jordan, we would never, never forget God's faithfulness, right? Until the first time something doesn't go our way. And see, the story of Israel is painfully close to our story, because it's amazing. You think, wow, all that God did, the manna in the desert, the pillar of cloud and the fire and all his faithfulness and water out of the rock and on and on and on. But, you know, it's a real tough lesson for us to learn, and our flesh is always one decision away from showing back up again and misleading us. And so Joshua is leading this people who probably haven't changed much in their attitudes, and they're still tough and whatever. But then we're moving on here. There's the circumcision. All the children, all the boys born during their 40 years in the desert were not circumcised. And so they stop and they renew that covenant sign. And God says the reproach has been rolled away from the people because Joshua led them in faithfulness to renew this covenant sign. And then in the end of chapter 6, the verse 27, the Lord was with Joshua and his fame spread throughout the land. So not only amongst the Israelites, but now Joshua is famous, known as a warrior leader throughout all of Canaan, through all the peoples who live there, all of the foreigners who've been occupying Canaan's land, taking care of it. You know, there's a verse in Genesis 15, and you don't need to turn there, but I'll just show you this. I've been looking for it for a while, and I hope I can find it again. The people of Israel were in Egypt for 430 years, but in Genesis 15, God is talking to Abraham just before he makes this covenant, and he says in verses 13 through 16, "Know for certain that your descendants," Abraham, God speaking, "will be strangers in a country not their own, and they will be enslaved and mistreated 400 years. But I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterward they will come out with great possessions. You, however, will go to your fathers in peace and be buried at a good old age. In the fourth generation, 400 years later, your descendants will come back here, for the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure." See, there's another part of the mystery of the planning of God that is just like, okay, now why has he done that? Why did God keep them such a long time in slavery? But there was something about the sin of the Amorites that had to be considered. And so God's planning, God's timing is perfect, even though it drives us crazy. Has anyone, I won't ask for a show of hands, but I'm sure most of us have had times when God's sense of timing makes us crazy. You know, he promises, but that's fantastic. But, you know, I don't want to promise unless it's going to happen today. You know, like, I like it now. I don't want to wait. And so many things that we've watched, you know, as we've been looking at these Old Testament characters, and we've looked at Abraham and Jacob and Joseph and Moses, and these men have been given incredible promises and so much provision, and they had to wait and wait and wait and go through terrible times to get to that place where they actually see what God is doing. And some of them never did see the fulfillment of the promise, and yet here they are, Abraham's descendants, 400 years later. One person even refers to them as numerous as the sands of the sea, as God had promised. And so here they are, these millions of descendants of Abraham, that he would never have believed possible when God had made that promise. So here they are. Joshua's fame is growing as a warrior leader after 55 years in training, both as a slave and desert wanderer. And then Joshua, of course, leads them through. You know, I was thinking maybe we could see the VeggieTales version of the walls of Jericho falling. Most of you have seen those with the neatest little French peas ever. And so those were really great. But we know that story. We know the story of going in village after village, people after people, and taking the land according to this promise that God said, everywhere where you put your foot, everywhere you advance, I'll give it to you. And I think obviously there's a spiritual lesson there for us as well, where if we're bold enough to say, you know what, God has plans for us. God has, you know, we say here, bringing hope to a hurting world, and, you know, what our youth are doing and what they've invited us into, I think it's exciting because where we place our foot, I believe God intends to extend his kingdom through us into those areas and bless us in return, as these people have been doing to our young people. So Joshua takes them through all. He distributes the land and allots it out to all of the different tribes. He takes care of the Levites, who are called to be priests. And so there are special cities that are set apart for them because they're not to own land, but there's a place for them. And then at the end of the book of Joshua, as we walk through all the way to the end of his life, we're really speeding through here, but in Joshua chapter 23, there's this triumphant farewell of Joshua to the leaders and the people of Israel that I think is worth us reading as we close up here this morning. So in Joshua 23, after a long time had passed and the Lord had given Israel rest from all their enemies around them, Joshua, by then old and well advanced in years, summoned all Israel, their elders, leaders, judges, and officials, and said to them, I am old and well advanced in years. You yourselves have seen everything the Lord your God has done to all these nations for your sake. It was the Lord your God who fought for you. Remember how I have allotted you as an inheritance for your tribes, all the lands of the nations that remain, the nations I conquered between the Jordan and the Great Sea in the west. The Lord your God himself will drive them out of your way. He will push them out before you, and you will take possession of their land as the Lord your God promised you. Be very strong. Be careful to obey all that is written in the book of the law of Moses. Where did we hear that before? Without turning aside to the right or to the left, do not associate with these nations that remain among you. Do not invoke the names of their gods or swear by them. You must not serve them or bow down to them, but you are to hold fast to the Lord your God as you have until now. The Lord has driven out before you great and powerful nations. To this day, no one has been able to withstand you. One of you routs 1,000 because the Lord your God fights for you, just as he promised. So be very careful to love the Lord your God. But if you turn away and ally yourself with the survivors of these nations that remain among you, and you intermarry with them and associate with them, then you may be sure that the Lord your God will no longer drive out these nations before you. Instead, they'll become snares and traps for you, whips on your backs and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from this good land which the Lord your God has given you. Now I'm about to go the way of all the earth. You know with all your heart and soul that not one of all the good promises of the Lord your God gave you has failed. Every promise has been fulfilled. Not one has failed. But just as every good promise of the Lord your God has come true, so the Lord will bring on you all the evil he has threatened until he has destroyed you from this good land he has given you. If you violate the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods and bow down to them, the Lord's anger will burn against you, and you will quickly perish from the good land he has given you. So Joshua gives this stirring rehearsal of where God has brought them in this good and wonderful land and his faithful promises and his achieving of all these things. And of course, the people are all jazzed at this point. And yes, we will always obey. And as long as Joshua was alive and all the elders who were with him, helping him, as long as they were alive, they obeyed. And then, of course, we know the bad news. And so that's what we have. Now, the interesting thing here, and I don't remember what verse it's in, but you can look it up as you read through this. Joshua was 110 years old when he died. So for the first 55 years of his life, 50%, he was in training. And then he led as a warrior leader for the last 55 years of his life and died at the age of 110. he was able to accomplish all that God had set before them, all the nations God had sent out before them, wanted to extinguish before them, drive out or annihilate. And there's another part that you can read also for yourself, because I didn't take the reference down as I was reading through. There's a point at which it says God's not going to drive them all out before you at once, because if the whole land was emptied out before you in one fell swoop, you wouldn't be able to take care of all the land that needs to be taken care of. It would become overrun, and the wild beasts would trample it and you. And so they moved in gradually, one people group at a time were annihilated so that they could take possession. But even after Joshua died, they were still to drive those other nations out and have nothing to do with them. But of course, they didn't drive them out, and they eventually ended up doing what Joshua told them they better not do. So Joshua's life might be similar to ours as a disciple of Jesus. We may figure there's been a period of slavery in our lives. And, you know, maybe for teenagers, you think that's what you're living right now. But then there's this period of desert. You think you're getting out of one, and all of a sudden it's this vast time of, where is this? I mean, when is this going to happen? And I thought this, but this is what I'm living. And then at the appropriate time, maybe halfway through your life, hopefully earlier, God comes through and becomes good on his promise, which he's never forgotten. And then Joshua has this incredible ending. The second half of his life was phenomenally different than the first half, just because he was seeing God's faithfulness day after day after day. He must have just been overwhelmed with that, and no wonder his fame grew. So as we consider that, as we consider our own Bondage in Wilderness Leadership Training Institute that we're in, could we understand that God is faithful to his promise? Because if he's not, then we are wasting a lot of time. We could be sleeping till noon. But because God is faithful, and we know he's faithful, and he's been faithful to his promises, and he's gotten us out of bad things in the past, and he's delivered us and healed us and saved us and all of these things in our past. So, yes, amen. And so that's important for us to be able to look back, but also to look forward and say, I'm not yet where I want to be. But God is faithful, and he's going to do it. God will accomplish it. So that's our hope this morning as disciples. And I hope as we look at these Old Testament characters, typical disciples, you know, we shouldn't expect our lives to be much different than some of the things these people went through. And it seems like waiting is a major theme. So, you know, I think we better probably just get used to it and just trust in God's faithfulness and rejoice in him even as we wait. You know, my commitment is not to gripe and complain my way through waiting and testing periods. And I'm slightly improving in that. But, you know, we've got a long ways to go in that. So being excited as we wait through is a tough thing, and God will give us grace to do that. Let's pray together this morning. Father, you're an amazing God, and the story you're weaving so often makes no sense. And it's not even from anything we understand, it's not even anything we want part of. And yet when we see, when your hand moves and we see a response, we see an answer to prayer, we see that healing, we see the job or that housing or that relationship, we stand in awe, Father, because you just keep doing it over and over and over again. And so we're here this morning, and we may feel like we're still in slavery, or we still may feel like we're wandering around in the desert, or we feel like maybe we're moving into Canaan, but it's just one battle after another. And so, Father, help us to pass this Leadership Training Institute with flying colors. Help us to look to you. Help us to stay focused and know that waiting is a major part of this training and this ability to take ourselves off the throne and take ourselves less seriously and allow you to just do what you've planned to do all along. Help us to cooperate with you as you do this. Thank you for these examples. Thank you for these men who were incredibly blessed by you. Incredibly flawed, but incredibly chosen and blessed. And their stories encourage us because it's not just perfect people who make it. It's not just people who always do the right thing at the right time and never mess up. Nobody yet that we've looked at has lived perfectly. So we want to follow you. We want to be the ones who would stay the course. See your plan. See your salvation. That we would rejoice. That we would give you praise. As we sang this morning, you alone are worthy of praise. You alone are worthy of our praise. And so, Father, forgive us where we place importance and emphasis and maybe even worship in other areas, and we say that's the big deal. That's what we're going for. Father, what we're going for is you. And success and fulfillment and all those things are secondary. We just want your heart. Just as these homeless people have been testifying to our youth, it's not the cheese sandwich. It's the fact that someone values them enough to take time when they could be doing something else, and they make room and they include them. That's what you do for us. Help us to have our hearts encouraged this morning as we hear your Spirit speaking to us. It's not long now. Let's be encouraged this morning, Father. Thank you for meeting with us. Thank you for your presence here in this room and for the many answered prayers that we represent in this room this morning. Now help us to go from this place not losing sight of our true goal. And we will give you praise, Father, in Jesus' name. Amen. God bless you.